It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Monday, June 15th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today, the annual E3 video game conference kicks off in Los Angeles. It's a big event for the gaming industry, and there will be a lot on display. Professional competitive video gaming or esports, the weird world of indie gaming, and, of course, virtual reality. A few days ago, Oculus announced a partnership with Microsoft for its virtual reality headsets that are hitting store shelves next year. Reporter Gigi Duban reports on whether this E3 conference might be the one where we see virtual reality start to fulfill its promise.
Virtual reality grew in the gaming world, but where it'll meet the masses is in mobile technology. Facebook, Samsung, and Google are already in. Mark Bolus is director of the Mixed Reality Lab at the Institute for Creative Technologies.
They're all jumping in a way that's slightly skewed towards the things that they're best at.
For Samsung, it's mobile phones. For Facebook, it's the social experience in a virtual world. Amir Rubin, CEO of Sixth Sense, says this is the year virtual reality engages more developers, especially in the mobile space.
There's going to be hundreds of millions of these phones that have VR capabilities by the end of 2016.
The trick is getting VR headsets into consumers' hands. The Oculus Rift, for example, is going to come bundled with an Xbox controller. Will mobile phones come with headsets? Rubin says for that to happen, there have to be good applications consumers want. Otherwise, it's just a funny-looking device strapped onto your face. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
Hey, can you feel that? It's been 3 days since the FCC's net neutrality rules officially took effect. The battle between internet service providers, government regulators, and consumer advocacy groups isn't over, but a milestone has passed. Brian Fung is a technology reporter for The Washington Post, and we wanted to get some details from him. Hi, Brian.
Hi there.
There are three basic rules that have gone into effect here. Tell me what they are.
So the first one is no blocking, which means that internet providers can't block legitimate traffic from getting to you. The second rule is no throttling, which means that internet providers can't slow down your traffic. And then the third rule is no paid prioritization, which basically means that internet providers can't selectively speed up certain websites in exchange for money from the website operators.
What happens if an internet service provider breaks one of these rules?
Well, the FCC would be able to take action against that. You know, consumers could file a complaint to the FCC, and then the FCC would have to look at that complaint seriously and evaluate on a case-by-case basis whether or not the internet provider has actually broken the rules.
My assumption here is that the answer to this question will be no, but is my experience as a user going to change?
You're absolutely right, and the answer is no, but that's partly the point, right? Internet providers, according to the FCC and a federal court, the D.C. Circuit, say that internet providers have the incentive and the ability to slow down traffic for monetary gain. And so these rules are intended to make sure that your internet experience doesn't change and that internet providers don't interfere in the way that you experience the internet on a day-to-day basis.
Brian Fung is technology reporter for The Washington Post. Brian, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Marketplace Tech is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. To keep our coverage strong and relevant, think about making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from Newman's Own Foundation. You can donate at marketplace.org by June 30th. The more we've learned about the hack of information at the Office of Personnel Management, the worse it has gotten. 4 million current and former government employees are getting notices informing them that their personal information was stolen by cyber thieves in the last few years. What will that notice look like? Well, not a newly issued Social Security number. So if a bank can do that sort of thing when a data breach happens, why can't the government? ESET researcher Stephen Cobb will help us understand. Hey, Stephen.
Hi there, Ben.
What could the U.S. government do in the event of a security breach like this if it managed Social Security numbers like a bank manages credit card numbers?
You can change a credit card number or a bank account number you can't really change a social security number. We all get one, and there are only very, very extreme circumstances under the current law in which you can get a different one.
It's never going to happen, or maybe it might happen a long ways down the road once our government gets super techie.
Sorry about the laughter at the super techie, but you know, one of the things about this federal incident and the federal government in general and information security is that it's extremely behind. And the issue of issuing everybody new identification is just huge.
All right. So what might the government be able to do that maybe a bank couldn't do?
I think the government could take this as an opportunity to invoke potentially broader powers in pursuit of the people that are doing this. And of course, that takes you into a whole other area of difficulty because there's clearly suspicion, strong suspicion, or even belief that it's a nation state operation. An analogy actually is not so much banking as piracy on the high seas. The nations of the world in years gone by, centuries gone by, decided that having pirates was just in nobody's best interest, and that in order for a base level of secure commerce to occur, there had to be rules on what you could and couldn't do on the high seas.
Your high seas analogy is doubly interesting because there was also plenty of examples of pirates posing as nation states and vice versa, right?
Yes. I mean, the classic example is Sir Francis Drake, who the British regard as a hero for saving us from the Spanish, and the Spanish regard as a pirate because he sacked the town of St. Augustine in Florida and stole a lot of money.
Stephen Cobb is a security researcher at ESET North America. Stephen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.